You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I take a few days to kind of unwind after a tumultuous end to the season there. I know you were kind of stuck by yourself having to recap the last game of the year, and unfortunately it didn't pan out in a playoff spot. But you know what? I'm recharged and ready to continue talking about the Heat and NBA in general.
And what better way to do that than with a mailbag? Because that's how we do it. We love doing the mailbags. So just in advance, thank you to everybody that sent them. We got a lot, just a ton of questions. So we're actually going to break this out into two parts. We're going to do a two-part mailbag, one today, one tomorrow. So let's just get right into the first question here. And I like this one, speaking of not making the playoffs. What a season. There's so many factors that Pat Riley and the organization will have to work through this summer. Do you think that this team, if all return with a healthy Winslow, Waiters, and a first-round pick, is a top-four team in the East? I know we had the 13-game win streak, which sort of skewed the second half of the season record, but I don't know why this team couldn't get to 50 wins next season if healthy. Thoughts? That question from Jordan Malley.
That's an interesting question, and the 50-win benchmark is an intriguing one also. And, you know, you have to look at this season and realize that only three teams in the Eastern Conference reached the 50-win plateau. That was Boston, obviously, that led the Eastern Conference with 53 wins. Cleveland kind of coasting in the second half of the year with 51, and just above Toronto with 51 wins also. So I don't know that Miami would be able to pull off 50 wins. I think that seems like a pretty high goal to reach for this team. I don't think high 40s is beyond the realm of possibility. Mm-hmm. I just think 50 might be exceeding it just a tad. You know, we never know how things are going to pan out. Obviously, it takes a lot of assumptions on our part to look ahead and see where Miami fits next year. Let's, again, using Jordan's criteria, if we come back with a healthy Winslow and Waiters and I assume re-signing James Johnson as well, that would be a big – that would be a big part of Miami's goal of reaching 50 wins or at least being one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. But we have talked about before where the Miami stands, at least how they played in the second half of the season in comparison to other teams. And we had talked about that in playoff seeding, that we thought we were more dangerous than an Atlanta Hawks team or, you know, other teams in the Eastern Conference, maybe slightly better than the Wizards, although they're pretty good, maybe more dangerous than Toronto. You know, there are lots of different things to look at there. I think clearly Cleveland is still the top of the Eastern Conference, mm-hmm. despite their record. I think that Boston is pretty good and pretty deep in comparison, but I think Miami matches up well. I like the possibility of them being a top four team in the East. I think, you know, assuming you bring a nice pick back, you find a way to incorporate Winslow into the rotation, not necessarily as a starter, maybe as a power forward if he's willing to assume that role, kind of moving Luke Babbitt as an emergency shooter off the bench or something along those lines. That certainly plays to the pace that Miami incorporated in the second half of the year with Dragic and Waiters, you know, moving the ball up the floor quickly. And I kind of like the possibility. What do you think about that?
I think top five is good, and I like where you're going with this, because Jordan has two different questions. He said 50 wins, top four team in the East, and I'm with you. And we've heard this 50-win mark thrown around, because 50 wins is a typical benchmark of which teams are measured in the NBA, right. But you're right. Only three teams in the East even hit it. The top five seeds in the West hit it, I think, right? Utah and LA both had 50 wins, yeah. So, but 50 wins is tough. But then you look at this team that had 41 wins, and then you assume, okay, don't absolutely suck in the first half and go 11-30. You get a healthy Josh Richardson. You get Justice Winslow back for more than 18 games. A whole year of development for Deion Waiters and a whole year of, like, peak condition James Johnson and peak condition Goran Dragic, and maybe Whiteside takes another step forward, Tyler Johnson takes another step forward. All that to get 9 more wins than they did this year? And it seems realistic, but we know that the NBA doesn't really work like that, right? It's not just straight math. Right. So right. I like the idea of framing it. How high can this team get seeded? This is a team that got the third seed with 48 wins 2 years ago, right? So that 48 win area, I think they can get, they can be good enough to just kind of sniff 50 wins. Whether or not they make, they can, I think anywhere between like 47 and 52 wins makes sense. That seems like an appropriate window for this team. If they were to just run it back, you get a full year of Justice Winslow, and like you said, find a way to incorporate him back in the rotation. You get a full year of healthy Josh Richardson. You get guys that aren't playing on contract years, and you know, so they could maybe even focus more on their development within the Heat scheme. A guy like Deion Waiters specifically. I think top five. Just because you're right, Cleveland, number one, they're going to be the number one team in the East until LeBron is not in Cleveland. Toronto, I think, is just going to be better next season, possibly. It depends on a lot what happens with them in free agency, too.
Yeah, I mean, Lowry's a free agent. Yeah. I mean, they still have a glaring hole to power forward. I mean, assuming they re-sign Ibaka or at least make a concerted effort to do so.
And if they get their guys back, they could be good. Boston, I think Boston, it depends on what happens in this playoffs. I mean, this is a team that could go the other way. You know, if they bottom out against the Bulls here in the first round, it could go the other way. They're down 1-0 at the time of that we're recording this. And then there's Washington, I think, is actually, I'm really high on Washington.
Yeah, but if they lose Otto Porter, then
there's no chance. They're going to be just fine.
That's a good point. Now, I mean, he does certainly add some versatility there, a nice defensive presence off the bench, and he's a capable scorer, not necessarily a consistent one. So, I mean, there's nice pieces there. Forward. Yeah, but
Kawhi Leonard.
I don't see. You see, Atlanta probably won't play as well. I assume that they're probably going to take a step back, depending on what happens with Paul Millsap. That could be a huge step back. Milwaukee is an intriguing team, also. Yes, you assume Giannis. You assume Adetokounmpo is going to take another leap forward, but you know, obviously Jabari Parker is probably going to miss most, if not all, of next season. Can Chris Middleton continue? Does Brogdon have another level for him to reach? These are all questions that you know you have to address. Indiana and Chicago, neither of those teams seem like they have much this season, and much less something to look forward to. I don't think either of them have any kind of development or player development in the works. A low draft pick maybe that could buoy them. I don't think they're going to attract any free agents there of note.
Looking at kind of like the outlook of these teams, I think Miami is a team that a lot of people consider on the up and up.
Sure.
But other than that, maybe Washington and Miami and Milwaukee, like you said. But even Cleveland, it's like, how much longer can they do this, right? We've seen how much, you know, 3-4 straight finals could take a toll on a team.
Right.
Boston, what's their deal? Are they going to be building around the number one pick in the draft? And if that's the case, you're going to have to give that guy some minutes. Like, what's their plan here? Right. Indiana, every time Paul George loses a playoff game and somebody else, he throws another teammate under the bus. So we'll see what happens with that. But let's look at this objectively a little bit, because I think we tend to say, okay, look at what this team did this season. Let's go again. Let's compare against what we think other teams will do in free agency and next season and everything like that. Let's just look at this roster. You got Goran Dragic, who played at an all-star level. Wasn't an all-star, but 20 points and 6 assists a game. That's an all-star level point guard.
Yeah.
Hassan Whiteside, league's leading rebounder, one of the league's best shot blockers. You and I get frustrated with Whiteside all the time, but this is a guy that's probably going to finish in top 5 defensive player of the year. So you got him, you got Dragic, and you've got role players like James Johnson, who can do does everything that you want out of a modern day power forward, right?
Yeah.
He does. Yeah. You've got a deep bullpen of guards between Richardson, Waiters, Josh Richardson,
Tyler Johnson,
Wayne Ellington possibly coming back. This is a team, Winslow coming back, and he's still young and is getting better. He's a stud perimeter defender at the worst, right? Another really important thing for in the NBA right now. This is just a team that looks built to win 45-plus games, and I think that's fair, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, I'm curious to see if James Johnson has another level, or if he can maintain this. You know, there's obviously the contract year, you know, that historically a lot of players have obviously, you know, taken another step to show that they're worth a long-term deal. I don't know if he's that kind of guy. I mean, he was just given a really good opportunity from everything we heard. during today's exit interviews, it seems like he was really grateful for the Miami Heat franchise for helping him kind of blossom and grow as a player. So I'm not sure if he has another step there, but at the same time, he's still very productive and a very capable player. So that's an interesting question for the Heat. But I guess you're right. I think, you know, they're certainly capable of being one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. I imagine Cleveland probably takes another step back, right? I mean, knowing that they're getting another year older, that right. The wear and tear of the regular season is too much for them to handle at times, they might shut it down even earlier, knowing that they can always flip the switch in the playoffs, well, as long as they have a guy like LeBron there. So as far as reaching that top four or 50-win plateau, Miami has as good a chance as anybody in the Eastern Conference.
So Miami's obviously not playing anymore, but they're going to play next season. As long as we are talking about how hopeful we are about next season, make sure that you're downloading the SeatGeek app now to be ready for next season, because SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to find tickets for the Miami Heat tickets that you want to see so that you can see them in person. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for this weekend or any game this season or next season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because it price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Best of all, Locked On Heat listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. How do you do it? Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code LOHEAT, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your very first SeatGeek purchase. So download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LOHEAT now, and get ready to buy those tickets next season. All right, next question comes from Gene. I feel like us not making the playoffs definitely put a dent in our chances of landing a whale like Gordon Hayward this offseason. So do we focus on keeping and improving our current core, or do we be aggressive and trade up in the draft, or will Riley continue his pursuit of the big whale this offseason?
Yeah, a lot to break down in Gene's question there.
Well, we know that Riley's not going to – his number one option, right, is not going to be build through the draft. That's the fallback plan, like plan C, D, or E. But we know that's probably not going to be his plan, right? So we can eliminate that.
Yeah, I mean, with the assumption, if they re-sign everybody, I think. Mm-hmm. If they lose Waiters in free agency, if Ellington opts out or for whatever reason, if James Johnson doesn't re-sign with the team, then all of a sudden, you know, that shifts Miami's focus, I think, more on the rebuilding effort. And maybe then you start looking at the draft as an opportunity. But traditionally, historically, Riley has always sought the whale. Now, I'm curious as to why Gene thinks us not making the playoffs puts a dent in those chances. Because to me, I think the effort that the team shown, if anything, the hyping of the culture, the show, the fact that it's been able to resuscitate careers and to help players reach their full potential here. If anything, regardless of whether or not they made the playoffs this year, I think it still shows that Miami's system is very, very functional. And I think that's certainly alluring to any free agency, including Hayward. I think he could probably look at this team and say, you know what, I could probably stand to get better as a player. He's a noted workaholic. He's done wonders as far as building his body up. And I think that kind of there's certainly some appeal there with the strength and conditioning system that Miami employs. I think that would really be appealing to him. So to me, I think their chances are better because of the effort that they showed this year.
I mean, I could see how missing the playoffs by a game hurts, because let's say Miami's in that eighth spot and they're playing Boston and they somehow upset Boston. Hayward can look at that Heat team that upsets Boston in the first round and say, well, this is a team that made the Eastern Conference semifinals, and if I join that team with that core, we can make the conference finals easily. I could see how maybe that's the situation, but I do think that I should rephrase that. I don't think that missing the playoffs hurts Miami's chances a lot. Making the playoffs, and somehow they did pull this 1-8 upset, could have helped them, but missing the playoffs doesn't really help them. And I'm with you. And as far as Hayward, it depends on certain things. Does he want to move from the Western Conference to the Eastern Conference? I mean, if you're a Heat fan, you've got to be rooting against two teams mainly in this first round. You got to be rooting against Utah, against the Clippers in this first round, because, and you got to hope that Utah loses by playing that slow plodding pace that they play, and Utah just like blows them out of the building now, or LA blows them out of the building. I know Utah won the first game, but if the Clippers can come back and just run them off the floor by just playing faster. NBA players, perimeter players, typically want to play fast, right? That's like in a general sense. So if Hayward's just like, look, I don't want to be on a team that has Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors clogging up the middle. I want to be on a team that's out and ready to run. I want to play with a point guard. I love George Hill. He's my buddy, but I want to play with a point guard who can get down the floor and run fast, like, and make snap decisions like Goran Dragic. Maybe that's something he looks at. We look at how Boston signed Al Horford. They didn't have an elite recruiter. They didn't win a playoff series even. But they had a fun system that Horford wanted to be a part of, and they had potential. We just got done in the first question talking about how much potential this Heat team could have. I think the system in place in Miami might be their new recruiter. Wade's gone. They don't have Dwayne Wade to recruit players. But that system and Eric Spoelstra might be enough now to recruit a guy like Hayward and say, yeah, we won 10 fewer games than your Utah Jazz did that last season. But if you join this team, in 2 years, we'll be better than that Utah Jazz team. Plus, you don't have to go through the Rockets, you don't have to go through the Spurs, and you don't have to go through the Warriors or the Clippers. So we just talked about Cleveland's might be kind of coming off a little bit. Boston, who knows what their situation is. There's a big opening for a dominant team in the East. And if Miami can sell Hayward on that vision, it works. So you got to root. If you're the Heat, you're rooting against Utah, and of course you're rooting against Boston, because if Hayward does decide to come to the Eastern Conference, it's going to be between Miami and his old pal Brad Stevens with the Celtics. And if the Celtics just completely tank this first round, he might look at that and be like, these guys can't get out of the first round of the playoffs. They don't know what they're doing. I'm going to go to Miami, because even though they missed the playoffs, I still have... They somehow got into the playoffs after 2 years after LeBron left and made it to Game 7 of the conference semifinals last season. I know this team can get back in the playoffs. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you have to look at, you know, the point you brought up earlier, whether or not he's willing to consider a move to the Eastern Conference. And I just remembered during restricted free agency, he signed an offer sheet with the Charlotte Hornets. And at that point in time, that team wasn't particularly on the up and up. But he had a chance to kind of be that team's leader. I think he comes to this team, and even on a roster that already has Whiteside and Dragic, he'd be the undisputed leader of this team, or at least not emotionally or you know, spiritually, let's say. But he'd be the statistical leader of this team. He'd be the face of the franchise.
Number one option
forward
on offense.
No doubt about that. And then, you know, the Eastern Conference gives him an opportunity to reach another market that I think has long been denied him in Utah. A lot of people, even our own fan base, our listeners that have questioned whether or not Hayward is the guy that you should, you know, pursue, or that Miami's front office should pursue, they don't really get that opportunity to watch much because Utah plays late. If they play on national television, it's very rarely that they do. And you know, there's a lot of questions there about what, you know, how good is Gordon Hayward when you don't see him as often. So he can come out east. I think he joins a Miami team that has obviously been in the spotlight before, knows how to market players, and can take him to that next level, help him, you know, expand his brand a little bit. And that's something that I think appeals to a lot of players, is not just being recognized by your peers, but also outside of that by fans in general. And you want to build on what he's already achieved as an individual player. He's already got the All-Star nod, and now you can take it to the next level. And whatever that might be, whether it's a championship in Miami or elsewhere, you know, continuing to make, let's say, the U.S. team in the future, there's lots of different things there. You know, in the Eastern Conference, I think he's got as good a chance as any as far as making the All-Star team again. So, I mean, you know, since they have it's all about the front court players now, I think he'd be one of the top forwards in the Eastern Conference. So there's definitely a lot of benefits to moving out east.
I wanted to ask, he's probably the third best. I mean, it depends on what you – I still think of Jimmy Butler more of a shooting guard than a small forward. He kind of has to play small forward this year. Yeah. But it's what, LeBron, Paul George, and then Hayward? And I might take Hayward.
Paul George isn't going to be in the East much longer, so I wouldn't worry about that. He's already shopping for homes in LA, I think. I think you're right about that. I mean, Millsap, how long can he continue being there?
Well, he's a power forward, right? So
yeah, but it's all about the front court. Yeah, I mean, as far as front court players, though. But yeah, you're right. Even if you just look at it as small forwards, yeah, I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head there that is at the same class as Hayward is.
So, all right, we covered that. Next question. Who wins in a playoff series? I love this question. Impossible hypotheticals. I'm so in on this. Who wins in a playoff series between the 2015-16 Heat and the 2016-17 Heat? Here are some rules. Assuming both teams are healthy, no Chris Bosh for either team. 2015-16 is post Joe Johnson acquisition. And the 2016-17 Heat are playing like they played in the second half of the year. So the 30-11 team, not the sucky 11-30 team. This question, this amazing question from Brian Young. I love this question so much. So I think we should start with a little refresher on just both rotations, right?
So sure.
2015-16 Heat. Goran Dragic, Dwayne Wade, Joe Johnson, Luol Deng at that stretch four, right? And Hassan Whiteside. Their key reserves are Josh Richardson, Winslow, Gerald Green, Amari Stoudemire, Tyler Johnson. And Tyler Johnson was on and off injured in that second half, but we'll count him as healthy. 2016-17 Heat, this last year, in case you forgot. Goran Dragic, Waiters, Magruder, Babbitt, Whiteside. Key reserves are Tyler Johnson, James Johnson, Willie Reed, Josh Richardson, Wayne Ellington. So we could do this in a couple ways. We can kind of break it down position by position, and talk about matchups because this is a playoff series. Or we could just kind of look at it as which teams accomplished more. But I kind of want to look at it as like a playoff series. Like, let's break this down as if this was in a round one series. What do you think?
All right. Yeah, I agree with that. I think the matchups are interesting, but, you know, a lot of, obviously, they cancel each other out. I mean, you could make an argument that, say, this year's Whiteside and Dragic are both better than last year's Whiteside and Dragic.
That's the first step, right, is the common denominator. Which ones are better? I think this year's Dragic is averaging, I've actually got the stats in front of me. So 15-16 Dragic, 14 points a game, 5.8 assists, 3.8 rebounds, shooting 31% from three. This last season's Dragic, 20 points a game, same exact amount of assists, same exact amount of rebounds. Basically, he's playing a minute more per game, and he's shooting 10% better from three-point range. So this Dragic by far is better than last year's Dragic. And I didn't even need to read the stats for you guys to know that, but... And then this Whiteside versus last Whiteside, he's averaging three more points and three more rebounds a game. His shooting dropped off a bit, but that's because last year he was just running a bunch of pick and rolls and dunking. This year he's been asked to do a little bit more on the offensive end. But overall, I think this year's Whiteside's better than last year's Whiteside, right? He took a step forward.
I'd say so. Probably not necessarily as efficient, but I think I'm more accepting of his role and everything else. I think that there were signs of maturity there. I still think that when Whiteside from this year talks to Whiteside from last year, they'd probably just go off and play video games together and vacate the center position altogether.
Well, it's a good thing we have Willie Reed as our backup then.
That's right. So Willie Reed versus Amari Stoudemire, yeah. I think that favors Miami this year. Yeah. To me, I'm looking at that forward position, and Magruder versus Deng is an interesting one because
I
think
Magruder versus Deng, or is it Magruder versus Joe Johnson and Babbitt versus Deng? It's James Johnson versus Deng because Babbitt starts the games, but if it's the end,
right.
I think James Johnson is that. So, but Luol Deng versus James Johnson is interesting. Let's talk about that then.
Yeah, I think that's a matchup that James Johnson dominates. I think Deng's – yeah, I definitely think so.
Huh.
I think Deng's physicality and defense were solid, but at the same time, I think that he wouldn't contain a guy who's so much quicker than he is at this point. I think, Johnson's three-point shooting is a big plus. Deng certainly provided some nice quality shooting on occasion, but, you know, there were still those moments of glaring inconsistency there. I think it favors this year's team, that matchup in particular.
Magruder versus Joe Johnson is an interesting one because Joe Johnson is a much better three-point shooter.
Yeah, that's not good for Miami. That's not good for this year's team. I think Joe Johnson wins that matchup, to be honest with you.
Well, can I play devil's advocate for Magruder?
Absolutely.
So Magruder is a better defender.
Sure.
Right? I think he's more laterally quick than Joe Johnson. I remember a few times Joe Johnson was getting blown by. And it's not like he didn't help, he didn't try, but he's, I think Magruder's just better. He's a fine spot-up shooter. Like, he's not Joe Johnson. He's not going to hit 41% from three-point range, but he hit 33% in the second half of the year. That's not bad.
No doubt. I just think Magruder's offense isn't necessarily going to be a factor, so Johnson can kind of limit him, or even if he lets him get his, you know, what, 8-9 points per game,
you're almost hiding necessarily Johnson on Magruder.
Right, exactly. But yeah. Johnson offensively, then, we've seen how taller players can get that nod over Magruder and kind of dominate that matchup. I think we'll see ISO Joe for days just shooting fadeaways over Magruder, who can only watch as they continue to fall through the bottom of the net there. So I think
that's not a bad argument, though, right? Is that if Joe Johnson's shooting fadeaways over Magruder, that's taking shots away from Dwayne Wade. That's taking shots away from Masters Whiteside. We saw this as an issue for the Heat last season. It was, there's almost too many guys that needed the ball. That's the pro for Magruder. He doesn't need the ball. And he does as much. Look, Joe Johnson's a better basketball player than Ronnie Magruder. But Eric Spoelstra didn't rave about Joe Johnson's winning plays. He didn't call Joe Johnson mini Udonis Haslam. Like, those things count for me. It's not in the stat sheet, but those things count for me. I'm trying to make a case for Ronnie Magruder, and there's no way in hell I would ever pick Ronnie Magruder as a better basketball player than Joe Johnson right now. But if you're talking about matchups, I agree with you. You can almost you could just hide Joe Johnson on Magruder. That's a problem. But Magruder's going to make some winning plays in that series.
Okay. I'll give you that. I mean, Johnson, sure.
They still, the 15-16 Heat win that matchup. I just wanted to make a case for Magruder.
No. And I agree. But, you know, ultimately it comes down to the best matchup, the meeting of the All-Stars, two Hall of Fame level talents, and that's Dion Waiters versus Dwayne Wade. And I think that's a crucial one because it kind of changes the complexity of everything. Obviously, part of the reason why Dragic struggled so much last season was the pace slowed down, the fact that Wade had the ball in his hands so much. I think, assuming he's healthy, Wade, you know, is still going to continue to dominate that team in the usage as far as you know, who has the ball in his hands. So I think that's certainly a factor that sways more in their favor. However, you have, on the flip side, this year's team runs at a quicker pace. Can Wade keep up with that? We already saw, obviously, a decline in his defensive ability. He's not necessarily going to, you know, stay with a guy like Waiters. He might be prone to getting into cheap fouls. The thing, though, that I think throws me off a little bit is I think Waiters has a level of deference for Dion. I mean, Waiters has a level of deference towards Dwayne. Mm. And I think that it's going to take him out of the game psychologically. I think, you know, as much as Waiters loves the big moment, I think going up a guy that he clearly idolized growing up and it may have even patterned his game after would probably throw him for a loop. I don't know that he'd be comfortable staying with Dwayne Wade. I'd like to see the numbers. I mean, I'm sure it's something we could have looked up, and if I had known about this question, I probably would have done so. But the head-to-head matchup probably favors Dwayne Wade quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, look, Dion Waiters, we've seen, has the ability to dominate a moment. He can absolutely just, in the last couple minutes, he was Mr. Clutch for the Heat several times this season. And he took Wade's place in that regard several times a season. The Warriors game, for a big example.
This is his city, after all.
It is his city. But as much as Waiters could just dominate a few minutes, as we saw last season, especially in that first round against the Hornets, Dwayne Wade could dominate a series.
Okay.
And I agree with everything you're saying, that this team is actually functionally better than last year's team, because Dwayne Wade bogged it down so much, because he took the ball out of Dragic's hands. Dragic is better this season without Dwayne Wade. This team functionally, like I said, they move the ball better. It works better, but the team isn't better, I don't think, just because Dwayne Wade is gone. Because this team doesn't all... like, Dion Waiters wants to be the alpha dog. He's not. Dwayne Wade is. Dwayne Wade is a guy that can just put his back against the defender, get his fadeaway, or get the fake fadeaway spin towards the rim and reverse layup move that he has. Like, he's got those go-to moves that he could just do like Tim Duncan's bank shot at this point. And it's hard to stop. We've seen it at times even in Chicago this year with him. If it's a playoff series, if it's a seven-game regular season series, it might be different. But in the playoffs, you need a guy that could just do what Dwayne Wade can do. at least what he could do last year. To me, that gives the edge to Dwayne Wade. But it is interesting when you break it down in the macro sense of the teams, how that might change things. If you're the Heat this year, you put Josh Richardson on Wade. Wade's eating him for dinner, right?
He'd get to the foul line a lot, I think. Yeah. He's got enough veteran savvy. I think what Richardson certainly dominates as far as overall athleticism and length at this point is just, you know, Wade's savvy and his ability to draw fouls. I think he would live at the free throw line as he has so often throughout his career. And so I think that certainly puts Miami's current team at a disadvantage there.
But being that it's a playoff series, they have a lot more depth. I wonder how that comes into play.
But then it's also the playoffs, so you're looking at a tighter rotation. I mean, guys like Richardson cancels out Richardson from last year when he was shooting at such a high level.
That's even last Winslow year's versus Richardson Winslow. Is better than this year's Richardson.
Sure. Tyler Johnson this year better than last year? For sure.
I think that might be a major – that Tyler Johnson could win this series for the 16-17 Heat. He couldn't run the offense last year. Period, end of story. Couldn't do it. He was bad at it. Just could not do it. That's why they had, you know, Udrey. That's why they brought in Briante Weber. Like, he just couldn't do it. And Tyler Johnson this year showed that he could run the offense. So when Dragic comes off the court and Waiters is off the court, having Tyler Johnson in there could be huge for them. And then plus James Johnson coming off the bench too. I don't know. Like, they had last year's Heat had Winslow coming off the bench. I still take James Johnson still has an edge over Winslow. Wayne Ellington is a major upgrade over Gerald Green. Willie Reed is an upgrade over Meyer Stoudemire. They have no depth behind Whiteside, which is what bit the Heat in the ass last in the semifinals against the Raptors. Willie Reed's good depth there. Even O'Kara White's not a bad third center. So I don't know. Who would you take?
Yeah, I think, you know, home court advantage obviously not a factor for either team here, but I still tend to think that last year's team would win that because of Wade. I think that the overall pace favors them. I think they bog things down as they often did. I think there's still enough, you know, versatility on defense on that team where they might, you know, hinder Miami's ability this year to push the pace. And I think, you know, Wade just takes over. I think he'll get those superstar calls. I think Waiters won't be able to match up well with him. I think Richardson wouldn't be able to match up well. And I think Wade at that point in time, again, you know, given that he's healthy from 2 years ago, I think he'd still be a pretty complete and dominant player. I think he'd be a guy who certainly could change the tide of a playoff series. So I think it would come down to a seventh and final game back at the American Airlines Arena, but it would go towards the 15-16 team.
That's true. If it was in a game seven, Dwayne Wade, man.
I know
he's not on our team anymore, but it's Dwayne Wade, man.
Every ounce of my being is struggling with that because it's just, you know, this season, obviously, as disappointing as not making the playoffs was, obviously the second half of it was just so exciting. The level at which they played was as great as not necessarily maybe as the Big Three era when they were at their peak, but was fun and exciting. Again, you know, pushing the pace and playing defense at a high level, swinging the ball around. You know, shooting more than they ever have at any point in time in franchise history. So many things to make this year's team so exciting and to, you know, to consider as one of the favorite Heat teams of all time. And I just, at the same time, though, I can't bet against Wade at his prime or even in healthy Wade.
Just a good series, Wade. Yeah. Well, yeah. They could definitely beat the Celtics in the first round, that's for sure. Well, that's all we have for today. Thank you to SeatGeek, the friendliest and smartest way to buy and sell tickets. Use the promo code LOHEAT and get $20 after your first SeatGeek purchase. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, or you can send us these mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so. Get the podcast automatically every day. We'll be here all summer. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.